Please stand by. Good day and welcome to the IBM Subcapacity Licensing for Passport Advantage training for IBM sales reps. A reminder, today's call is being recorded. Now, at this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlos Belak. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Melinda. This is Carlos Belak from Worldwide Pricing. I have a number of colleagues with me on the call this morning, and they'll be helping me when we get to the Q&A. So in the meantime, let me just show, in case you don't have the charts in front of you, let me just tell you how to get the charts for the presentation. If you have the calendar invite, if you got that by selecting one of those calendar buttons, if you go into the details of the calendar invite, the second link, if you click on it, will take you to the Excel Subcapacity internal page. And it'll take you right to a section for, you know, that has four sections, and you can select the charts for the fourth conference call for AP. And that should get you the charts. If you don't have one of those calendar invite buttons with a link, you can go to the Excel homepage. And from the Excel homepage, if you go to the right-hand nav bar and select Passport Advantage from the key tools and resources drop-down menu on that right-hand nav bar, then select Go. You'll get to the Passport Advantage page, and from there, if you again go to the right-hand nav bar and select the fourth choice under General Program Information, it'll be labeled Subcapacity Licensing and Passport Advantage, and that'll take you to the Excel Subcapacity Licensing page, and from there, select the first link on the right-hand nav bar under the section labeled IBM Internal Only. And that first link is the IBM Sales Training Virtualization Capacity Licensing. Again, and you can download the charts from there. So the charts are labeled Virtualization Capacity, Parenthetical Subcapacity Licensing, Sales Training, July 16th and 22nd, 2008. So welcome to the call. Hopefully you have those charts. Before we get started, let me first point out or try to articulate why I think this topic's very important for you, our sellers, to understand. The first reason is that, according to IDC, the virtualization market is growing very fast. At a 27% annual growth rate that's expected through 2011. Most of our customers are either using virtualization today or beginning to ask questions about it. And, you know, you, I think, need to be or to get comfortable being in a position to have a discussion with your customers to explain the rules and benefits of the offering. So with that, let's get into the presentation. Before we get to the agenda page, a note on page two that we're in the process of changing the name of the offering from subcapacity to virtualization capacity in recognition of the use of the word in the use of the word virtualization becoming commonplace in the distributed marketplace. So as I go through this presentation, and if you look at some of the collateral on our web pages, you'll see the words virtualization capacity and subcapacity used interchangeably for a period of time. So with that, let's go to the agenda on page three. And let me just point out that the objective for the presentation is to provide a high-level overview of virtualization capacity licensing, enough, you know, to put you in a position to start to become comfortable if you're not already comfortable with the offering, as well as to communicate some of the changes to the offering that we announced on July 1st. So if you look at this agenda page, we'll start with background about technology and competitive landscape. We'll go through virtualization capacity licensing examples and then talk through some of the key requirements, including the use of the ILMT or IBM license metric tool. We'll talk about the value of virtualization capacity licenses and then next steps. So if we go to page four, let's start with some background on technology and first point out at the top of the page that, or reiterate that PVUs and virtualization capacity using PVUs represents a significant portion of our distributed software portfolio. More than half of the revenue flows on PVU or processor value unit part numbers. And of that, a significant portion, 85% approximately, flows on either x86 systems, those systems with processors made by Intel or AMD, x86 processors, or you can see here 25% on IBM Power systems. And then if you look into the high volumes in the x86 segment, most of those servers, 70% or so, are small servers, servers with two sockets. And we'll talk about what sockets are as we get into the presentation. Now, in terms of processor market facts, I think the important point to understand here is two points, really. One is that the performance capacity of processor cores continues to increase. And in addition, the number of cores per socket is beginning to double. And the example that we have here is Intel, which is, of course, the high-volume player in the server market in terms of processors, is moving to exclusively quad-core or four cores per socket servers beginning, we believe, in early 1Q or mid-1Q 2009. So the minimum size of the two-socket server, which is the dominant server from Intel, is growing from what was four cores per server, two sockets times dual core, to eight cores per server, which is two sockets times quad core. So that's a big event that's pending. From a virtualization market fact perspective, again, IDC, I mentioned the fact, says that the virtualization market is growing or expected to grow by 27% per year through 2011. And I think, you know, what customers find very attractive about virtualization technology is that it allows them to consolidate servers, to improve the or increase the utilization of servers, and thereby save money on electricity, predominantly, I think, as well as space and administrative costs. And the other point in terms of the growth in the virtualization market is that underneath that 27% annual growth expectation, x86 virtualization is growing twice as fast almost as the virtualization in the RISC Unix market. And in the x86 virtualization space, today VMware controls 80 to 85% market share, right? So x86 and Intel, very big deal for virtualization. And VMware today, at least, is the dominant player in virtualization for x86. So with that technology background, if we go to page five, and we talk a little bit about the competitive environment, and on this chart, we're comparing at a high level IBM versus Microsoft and Oracle from a capacity licensing and virtualization licensing perspective. And I think the key points in the column for Microsoft compared to the IBM column are first that Microsoft has fewer than 25% of their middleware portfolio on capacity-based licensing, per-socket licensing in Microsoft's case. And, of course, they don't support RISC platforms. They play on x86 only. And in the x86 virtualization space, where Microsoft is relevant, for the products that are capacity-based, I think that we have an advantage in that because we license per core, we offer more granularity for customers who set up virtual environments. Microsoft's minimum licensing requirement is one socket. Ours is one core, and there's an advantage to be had there or to be discussed there with our customers. From an IBM versus Oracle perspective, I think the really big deal is that Oracle does not have VMware as an eligible virtualization technology from their licensing perspective. They prefer their proprietary Oracle VM virtualization technology. In fact, that's the only thing that they allow on x86. Whereas with the July 1 announcement, we have many VMware technologies eligible for virtualization capacity licensing. So this is a high-level overview of pointing out some advantages that we have relative to these two key competitors, and we are working on sales scenarios to help illustrate these advantages for your use, and we'll be adding those scenarios to our websites as we go. So with that, let's go to page 6. Just a little bit here on licensing principles for capacity-based licensing, which important concept to sort of understand before we get into PVU licensing and virtualization capacity licensing. So from a licensing principle perspective, a couple of key points here. First, the licensing should scale with the value that customers receive from the middleware. And with PVU licensing, we're pricing for the processor capacity available. As the processor capacity available increases, as measured by the number of cores available to the middleware and the rating of those cores, if you will, you know, how fast those cores are or how slow those cores are, how much performance capacity those cores have. So number of cores times PVUs per core, as that increases, the price increases, and vice versa. So it scales with value received. Another important point here is that the licensing needs to balance precision with simplicity. So we don't want to get so precise that, our customers have to become licensing experts to, and our sales reps as well, to be able to apply the licensing. So we need to keep the licensing as simple as possible. And, of course, we need to make sure that we're priced competitively. So just to illustrate processor capacity available concept, if you look at the bottom of the page here, let me just say what it's not. It's not usage or utilization of a processor, right? We're setting our prices understanding that the historical utilization of a processor is relatively low. Anywhere between 5% and 20% is the averages in terms of utilization of a processor. And, this idea of pricing to the capacity available gets back to the balancing or the need to balance precision with simplicity. Trying to price based on utilization or usage, requires some form of a meter, for every middleware product in our portfolio, running on every hardware technology. It's a monumental increase in complexity relative to where we are today. And in addition to that, even if you could get that in place, you would have the additional challenge of migrating the install base from processor capacity licensing, which we've been, executing for a long time now, to some form of utilization, and, basically would create chaos for our existing customers. So we continue to price, and we intend to continue to price based on the processor capacity available, and that's simply the number of cores times the PVUs per core. Let's go to page 7. Just a quick tutorial here on terminology. I want to use this page to clearly articulate the difference between a processor core and a processor socket. The word processor doesn't have a single meaning any longer in the industry. We need to be careful to ask the question, how many cores or how many processor cores are available to the middleware in the environment that we're working with our customers on, looking to license for, because we require PBU licenses based on the number of cores, right? And if you look at the middle of this page, the diagram of a dual-core processor technology, you have two processor cores in this picture. We would require PBU licenses for each of those processor cores. And if you follow the page down, the way processor cores relate to processor sockets are that processor cores are effectively mounted on processor chips, and those chips are mounted on processor sockets, and those sockets are mounted on the motherboard of a server. So we, in this dual core example, would require licenses for each of these processor cores, and so does Oracle, by the way, whereas Microsoft requires a license for each socket. So they would require effectively one license for this dual core processor socket, whereas we would require licenses for both cores is the key point there. So how many cores are available to the middleware is the key question, the key takeaway from this page. So go to page 8, just a quick recap on the processor value unit structure and how processor value units work before we get into virtualization capacity on the following page. So if we look at the top of this page, just a reminder that each middleware program has a unique price per PVU. PVUs are transferable by product across different hardware servers, systems within the enterprise. And customers, as I mentioned, need to acquire PVUs based on the number of cores and the type of core. And the table in the middle of this page gives you an excerpt of the more extensive table that we have, the PVU table that we have on our PVU website. And as an example, cores with very high performance capacity, like Power 6 technology cores, require 120 PVUs per core, while cores on Intel or AMD x86 technology dual or quad-core processors require 50 PVUs per core. And then on the bottom of this page, just as a reminder, some of the key benefits of processor or PVU licensing, processor value unit licensing. I think the most, the key point here to understand is that PVUs give us granularity that, we didn't have with per-processor licensing. And that granularity gives us flexibility to provide a fair price for multi-core technology, as well as the flexibility to deliver or continue to deliver software price performance improvements on new processors that are introduced into the marketplace. And that granularity also enables virtualization capacity licensing to the processor core. So a quick recap on PVUs. Let's go and talk at a high level on page 9 about what is virtualization capacity licensing. And the first point on this page that I want to make at a high level, and we'll use full capacity licensing as a contrast to explain what virtualization capacity licensing is that in full capacity licensing, customers are required to acquire licenses, PVU licenses, for all of the physical processor cores on the server, whereas in virtualization capacity licensing, customers who meet the virtualization capacity licensing terms, including setting up partitions or virtual machines, essentially a subset of the server, and restrict capacity available to the middleware program to that subset of the server, customers can license for less than the total number of processor cores on the server. They would license to the capacity in that subset of the server, and we'll have examples to explain that further. The other point on this page that's important to understand is that virtualization capacity is becoming more important. It's growing in importance as processor vendors like Intel are adding more cores to servers, doubling the number of cores, and as a result, the minimum number of cores under full capacity licensing is increasing. It's doubling, right? And the example on this page is during 2006, 2007, in the middle of this page, dual-core processor technology from Intel is really the dominant technology. And with dual-core processors, we're talking two cores per socket. And as I mentioned earlier, most of the Intel servers are servers with two sockets. So two sockets times two cores per socket is four cores. And because we require 50 PVUs per core for the dual-core technology from Intel, that would be 200 PVUs per server on a full-capacity basis. And that that 200 PVU number, if you look to the right side of the page, is doubling as a minimum order size under full-capacity licensing as Intel, beginning in the first quarter of 2009, sells almost exclusively quad-core sockets. And again, if we have two sockets per server and quad core is the norm, we're talking eight cores or 400 PVUs. So customers who, ask you, why is my licensing doubling from 200 to 400 PVUs per core? You know, the first question is, well, because, you know, you have a server that has at least double the capacity, has double the number of cores, and the capacity per core is actually increasing. So at least double. And the customer says, well, I don't need all that capacity. And the answer to that is, well, you know, you should consider virtualization capacity or subcapacity licensing. So virtualization capacity helps reduce the minimum capacity to license as the minimum number of cores is growing on Intel-based servers. All right, so with that, let's go to page 10. Some of the key highlights from our July 1st announcement. In order to understand what we announced in July, let's first talk about where we were prior to July 2008. And, you know, essentially where we were was we did not have VMware as an eligible virtualization technology, and we were in an awkward situation with respect to the use and the requirement to use our IBM license metric tool. We had some business requirements on, you know, in connection with the tool, including the requirement that customers report to IBM on their licensing requirements and licensing entitlements in a virtualization capacity environment. But with the announcement in July, we're in a much better situation, much better position from a virtualization capacity offering perspective. We now have many VMware virtualization technologies eligible for virtualization capacity licensing, both single server as well as server cluster, and we'll talk more about that. Environments are eligible. And in addition, we have the new easier to install and simplified license metric tool, the IBM license metric tool, ILMT tool, available, and we have some very positive feedback with respect to the beta testing that was done for this new tool. So much better position. VMware is now eligible. The tool is available. The tool is easier to use, and the business rules have been simplified. And we'll talk more about the tool after the virtualization capacity licensing example. So let's go to page 11. Before we get into the scenarios, the examples, let me just point out that what we're going to talk about first is a general licensing example to introduce some of the concepts, and then we'll talk through a VMware or x86-based virtualization technology example, and you'll see that the licensing for x86 technologies, VMware, is what we support, what is eligible today. Very simple. Licensing simplicity was really our top priority, given the large volumes of smaller servers that characterizes this segment of the marketplace. And with respect to risk, we will talk a little bit about. We have an example. I won't go through the example in detail, but I will point out that in the risk technology space, the top priority is to, for the licensing rules, is to allow customers to optimize and optimize the utilization of those larger systems. And I'll talk a little bit about the rules that we have in place in order to do that. So with that, let's go to page 12. Before we get into the general example, again, let's just level set on a full capacity example. And the way to read these charts, all these examples are designed the same. At the top, there's a rectangle that tells you that this example is an example with one server and 8 physical cores. In the middle of the page, you can see that the software products are MQ and WAS on this server, and the server, again, has 8 physical cores. And then at the bottom is sort of the licensing answer or the licensing requirement given this example, and you can see that the requirement is to acquire licenses for 8 physical cores for both MQ and WAS in this full capacity example. So with that in mind, let's go to page 13 and look at the general virtualization capacity example. At the top, you can see that we have one server with 8 virtual cores and 8 physical cores. And in the example, you can see the server has been divided up into two partitions. PAR stands for partitions, with 4 virtual cores in each partition. And MQ is in both partitions, while WAS is in partition number 1 only. So with that scenario, if you look to the bottom of the page, you can see that the requirement is that the customer should acquire licenses for the 4 virtual cores in partition number 1 and 4 virtual cores in partition number 2 for a total virtualization capacity of 8 cores for MQ software. And for WAS software, the requirement is to acquire licenses for the 4 virtual cores. And since the 4 virtual cores is less than the full capacity, you know, it's to the customer's benefit to use virtualization capacity. So if we go to page 14, I want to talk through some key definitions and licensing rules that we have in place for VMware on x86 virtualization technology before we go into the example. And if you look at the top of page 14, the first two definitions, first VMware uses the term virtual CPU or vCPU, and what they do is allow customers to assign virtual CPUs to what they call virtual machines or VMs. And a virtual machine, you could think about, if you're familiar with System P technology, as very similar to a partition or an LPAR. So they have vCPUs, and they assign vCPUs or virtual CPUs or virtual cores, if you will, you could think about it that way, to VMs or virtual machines. We have a rule or definition that says each vCPU is equal to 1 core for PVU licensing. So if one physical core requires 50 PVUs per core, The same is true for one vCPU. It would be 50 PVUs per core. In terms of the licensing rules here, or the key rule, is identical for both single servers as well as groups of servers that we call server clusters. And the rule is very simple. Customers effectively have to count the maximum number of vCPUs in each virtual machine or each VM. And to illustrate that simple licensing rule, if we go to page 15, you'll see, if you look at the top, that we have a diagram here that is a diagram of a server cluster. And in this cluster, there are three servers with 12 virtual cores and 12 physical cores. And if you look on the right side, in the middle of the page, right side of the diagram, under the label physical environment, you'll see that the physical environment has three servers, and each server has four cores, so 12 cores in the physical environment. In the center of the middle of the page diagram here, labeled virtual environment, you can see that the customer has set up six VMs or six virtual machines, and MQ is available in the first four VMs, and some non-IBM products available in VM number 5 and 6. And you can see the number of virtual cores or vCPUs assigned to each VM, in that diagram there in the middle. And if you look down to the bottom, applying the simple licensing rule that says, you know, count up the number of vCPUs or virtual cores available to each virtual machine, you can see it's very simple. MQ software is in the first four VMs. The first four VMs have a total of 8 virtual cores or 8, you know, vCPUs available. And so the licensing requirement is to acquire licenses for 8 virtual cores. That's less than the full capacity of these three servers, so the customer is better off licensing to the virtualization capacity. I should point out that one of the rules that we have in all cases is that the customer needs to license to the lower of the virtualization capacity of the server or the server cluster, or the physical capacity of the single server or server cluster. So that's an important rule to our customers' benefit. Now, if we go to page 16, this page talks about some licensing rules that we have available for IBM Power VM virtualization technology-based systems, including, you know, rules for partitions, and capped partitions as well as uncapped partitions, and rules for shared processor pools and micro partitions. And I'm not going to talk through the shared processor pool example on the next page. We do have detailed charts, chart decks available, which describe how the licensing works for shared processor pools as well as for capped and uncapped partitions and other virtualization technologies that IBM Power Systems have available, as well as elsewhere in the RISC space. We have HP and Sun technologies that we have available for virtualization capacity licensing, and we have chart decks for each of those vendors and each of the technologies that are eligible from those vendors available on our licensing websites, and I'll point you to those websites later in the presentation. And I should say that we're also working on MP3 voice files to accompany those licensing rule chart decks, so that you can listen to those and your customers can listen to those voice files accompanied with the chart decks to understand the rules that for the technologies that they're interested in. But let me point out as an example to give you a sense for the point I made earlier about the rules being designed to allow customers to optimize the utilization of these assets. Let me just use verbally a shared. Let me talk about a shared processor pool as an example. So, and maybe we should turn to page 17 while I talk through it. But I'm not going to talk through it in detail. I just want to say that when you have a shared processor pool, the rule that we have in place is that the customer needs to license for the lower of the sum of the virtual cores available in the partitions that are aligned with the shared pool or the capacity of the shared pool. So, you know, because of that rule, customers, if they select their workloads carefully, you know, according to, for example, the times of the day that the workloads in the partitions that are aligned to the shared pool are, you know, requiring processor capacity, customers can essentially improve the utilization of the server, and that's a powerful thing in terms of improving the customer's total cost of ownership, saving money on electricity, space, admin cost, et cetera. And that's the really the key point to understand when it comes to risk technologies. With that, let me go to page 18. I think that the first point I want to make is that, as I made earlier, most customers are already using some form of virtualization, and some of them are not aware of the terms and conditions. So what this page is designed to do is to give you a summary sort of checklist of the key terms for the virtualization capacity offering, the key requirements, I should say, that, you know, you need to make your customers aware of if you, you know or think that they're interested in virtualization capacity licensing. And, you know, the first one is that customers must agree to the terms of our subcapacity attachment. And there's some details on page 28 on, you know, where to find that attachment. The second one is that customers need to follow the virtualization capacity license counting rules for the virtualization technology that, you know, they're using. I talked about the chart decks and the MP3 files that we're working on that are available on our website that I'll show you later. The third point is that not all of our products are eligible for subcapacity licensing. We have a list of products that are eligible along with the relevant part numbers. We have a list of eligible virtualization technologies as well as eligible processor technologies. And customers are required to use the ILMT tool and maintain documentation in the event of an audit. And you know, with respect to that tool specifically, if we go to the next page, we'll talk about that in more detail. So on page 19, key points at the top are, first, that the tool is now available, the ILMT tool, and you can see an image of that tool on page 29. The rule was, while the tool was being simplified, the customers who signed up for virtualization capacity agreed that they would begin using the tool once the tool became available. And for those existing customers who have virtualization capacity licensing, they need to install and begin using ILMT by November 30th, 2008. I should mention that ILMT is a no-charge product. For ordering of that no-charge product, you can look at page 30. There are some instructions there. The tool is recommended for use in all PVU, for all PVU environments, and, you know, specifically full-capacity environments. So it's recommended for full capacity. It's required or it's mandatory for PVU virtualization capacity environments, but there are a couple of exceptions. And I'll just you can see the list of exceptions here, but let me just point out the first one, which is kind of obvious. If we have a virtualization technology that, you know, is eligible for virtualization capacity licensing, for example VMware, that is not yet supported by the ILMT tool, which is the case for VMware. VMware is not going to be supported by the tool until the end of the first half, or the end of June 2009. Customers, that's an exception. Customers obviously don't have to use the tool in that case. Another important exception, the second one here, if the enterprise has fewer than 1,000 employees and contractors worldwide, those customers, while we recommend they use the tool, are not required to use the tool. But I do want to say also that for any one of these exceptions, if customers qualify for these exceptions, it's not like they don't have to track the licensing. They are required to track the licenses required using the manual calculation method. We have a template available for customers to use to track their licensing manually. And also important to mention, whether customers are using ILMT or using the manual calculation method, they're required to maintain documentation. So they have to, whether they're using reports that come out of ILMT or using the manual calculation method, they need to produce reports quarterly and maintain those reports for at least 2 years. So with that, let's go to page 20, talk a little bit about selling the value of virtualization capacity licensing. From a new license sale perspective, the key point here is that we want to sell customers the capacity they need. We don't want to sell them excess entitlements at a high discount, because if we do, then it's going to be more difficult, or it means that we'll be selling fewer licenses in future years, right? So let's sell them the virtualization capacity licensing if they're using less than the full capacity of the server, and reduce the discount based on the value of the virtualization capacity offering to our customers. From a license conversion perspective, at the bottom of the page here, the key point is that we need to manage conversions carefully. If you have situations where customers have had obtained full capacity licenses at high discounts in the past, and the discounts were unusually high because customers didn't need all of the processor capacity on the servers, then we need to be careful when we convert those full capacity licenses to subcapacity licenses. We should really try to bundle the conversion with the sale of new licenses at a lower discount. Let's go to page 21 sort of close on the next steps. I think the most important one is the top of the page here, to raise the awareness and help our sales reps with training like we're doing now, as well as the sales scenarios that I mentioned and the MP3 files that we're working on to accompany the chart decks that we already have to explain the licensing rules for each virtualization technology that's eligible. And in addition, we're working on making more software products eligible for this offering and more technologies eligible as well. Before we open up for Q&A, let me just spend a minute on page 22. And 22 is really a map of the collateral that we have available on our virtualization capacity websites. At the top of the page, labeled Internal Excel Site, it's really our main page for IBM sellers, and there's a link there. And the next item, External Site, is a link for our customers. And the next two sections show you the list of items or collateral that we have available, and it's identical, the collateral that we have available on the internal and external sites for those two sections. And it's only at the bottom of the page where you can see it's labeled internal only, that we have collateral that's visible to you, our IBM sales reps only. So there's some sales training material, there's some Q&A, and there's some rules and guidelines on conversions from full capacity to subcapacity licenses that's available only to internal reps. If you look at the middle of the page, on page 22 here, under the essentials section, items 2 and 3, just want to point out for you, number 2 is where you can find the subcapacity licensing attachments, and number 3, you'll find a link to the virtualization capacity license counting rules that I talked about, where we have chart decks available for your use and our customers' use. So with that, Melinda, if you could open up for Q&A, I appreciate it.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. A reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, to please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to be placed in the queue to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment. We'll take our first question from Alan Cheryl.
Hi, excellent presentation. Thank you. I'm sure much thought went into the naming change from subcapacity to virtualization capacity. And the question is about semantics with customers. There are differences between running in a subcapacity mode and a VMware image, for instance, virtualization mode. It sounds like we're treating or addressing both subcapacity and virtualization capacity as the same as far as licensing with the name changes. Is that accurate?
Say a little bit more about what you think. I mean, the name change is really, based on, the fact that the word virtualization is used, by both hardware and software vendors, to describe, licensing for partitions or, less than the full capacity of the server, as well as, licensing where, in the case of VMware, where capacity can be moving, from one server to another. So what is it about the virtualization image? I didn't quite catch the point.
Well, as far as renaming the offering to a virtualization capacity, it sounds like we're treating or addressing both subcapacity and virtualization capacity as the same as far as licensing with the name change.
We're not changing the rules. It's really just a name change. The sort of we believe the word virtualization capacity is more meaningful to customers than subcapacity. When we talk about virtualization capacity, we're talking about capacity in a virtual machine, or a partition capacity that's in a subset of a server restricted, to a entity like a partition.
Sure.
I'm not sure if I'm answering the question.
That answers it greatly. It sounds like we're expanding our definition of virtualization a bit, and that makes sense.
Okay.
We'll take our next question from Cheryl Gann.
Hi. I would just like to check if the customer were to sign up for a subcapacity program today, should they actually go ahead to install Tivoli Compliance Manager, or they should actually install ILMT?
Well, if they are a customer that is just now using virtualization capacity, I think that they should start with the ILMT no charge product, and I say that because the commercial product, the ITLCM product, is not yet up to date in terms of the virtualization capacity technologies. We started with ILMT, and we have a fixed pack that's scheduled for later, towards the end of 2008, that will bring to the Compliance Manager product, the commercial version, if you will, some of the virtualization technology capabilities that, that we now have in ILNT.
All right.
I would start with ILNT, and then, you know, later as Tivoli Compliance Manager gets more in sync, I would look to upsell them based on the additional functionality that's being planned for the commercial product.
All right, thank you. But can I also check, customer has also requested or asked, you know, whether, you know, the tracking software like, for example, ILMT, will be able to send any alerts when the software actually detects that the allocated virtual environment is using up the subcap license or using more than that? Does it have this capability?
I don't think it doesn't have alerts. But I think what the customer, you know, needs to do is create some discipline within their organization,
right.
You know, whereby it, you know, downstream system administrators, before they increase the size of the partitions or virtualization capacity that's available to the middleware, you know, they sort of need to ask permission, you know, to the folks who control the process. So, you know, the tool only measures the capacity available sort of after the fact. It doesn't, you know, I think that the customer, you know, is required to have a disciplined organization, you know, with that allows or controls, you know, the system administrators downstream.
Oh, so this alert or this requirement, you will have to go back to customer to manage it themselves then?
Yeah, I mean, the customer, you know, just like under full capacity licensing, a customer, you know, needs to make sure that the system administrators aren't duplicating images of our software on more and more servers, right? They have to have discipline, sort of a request process in their organization. The same is true for virtualization capacity. You know, I think what's new is that there's now a tool that after the fact will measure how much virtualization capacity or full capacity, right, because, again, we're recommending the tool for full capacity, has been made available by the system administrators downstream, right? So there'll be more control from a central asset management perspective, but it's after-the-fact control. The customer still needs to have processes in place, you know, to prevent, if you will, you know, the addition of capacity that is not approved.
All right. I just have one last question, if you don't mind.
Oh.
Okay. The customer that I actually have today is the Standard Chartered Bank. They actually also asked us if the Standard Chartered Bank, let's say India team, has actually signed up a subcapacity program in year 2007. Would the Standard Chartered Bank in Malaysia, in another region, would also need to sign another subcap program, or they can actually use back the existing one that has been signed by India team?
Steve, can you comment on, you know, how that works from a PA site perspective?
Yes, I can try, and then I'll probably lean on John or Sue. But it depends on how that customer has structured their Passport Advantage contract. If the bank in Japan is the originating site and the bank in Malaysia is an additional site, then the Malaysia bank could take advantage of the subcap terms that were, you know, accepted by the bank in Japan.
All right.
If they each had their own Passport Advantage contract,
yes.
It's based on the originating side of the Passport Advantage contract.
All right, so it has to be treated separately if they have different PPA site ID.
Is it the site ID or the base agreement number?
It's the base agreement number, So if like Steve said, if there are two separate agreements in the two different countries, then each would need to sign the subcapacity attachment. But if one of them is the originating site and the other is an additional site on the agreement, then the originating site would sign the subcap attachment.
All right. If I have more questions, may I know who should I direct it to pertaining to subcap program?
You should send it to the subcapacity ID that's referenced in the deck.
It's at the sales, the presentation deck?
I believe so. All right, Carlos?
You know where it is? It's at the very bottom of the website, the Excel subcapacity website page. You know, the link is at the top of page 22 in the deck. If you go to that link, go to the very bottom of the page. When you get to that link, you'll see the subcap ID.
The Excel site. I have to go to the internet Excel site.
Yep. And if you scroll down to the bottom, you'll find, you know, how to ask a question. You'll see an email address, which is an address that the folks on this call, you know, maintain. So you can ask a question of that address.
You'll also find that the address is at the bottom of slide 32 in the backup.
It's actually the one right above it. It's a subcap licensing at Somers.
All right. Got it. Thank you very much.
And again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. And we'll next go to Toshiki Sugimori.
Not an explanation. I have two questions. One is the support. If you were to use the subcapacity auto-virtualization, would the support have a original support, which is like a problem determination and also performance stuff, would be also covered by original support?
You're talking about support when you're using the ILMT tool?
Yes, and also the virtualization.
Okay, well,
for example, if you have a performance problem or if you need to do a problem determination to find out what the cause is, whether the virtualization is causing the problem or so.
Okay, well, okay, so with respect to the tool, and Steve, keep me honest, it's like any other product. You know, you have support available with the tool. I mean, Steve, maybe you can add more to that.
Right, the support entitlement for ILMT, even though it's no charge right now, it's the same level of support that we would give DB2 or MQ. So ILMT has a license entitlement that you order on Password Advantage, and once that entitlement is registered in Password Advantage, then the customers can, you know, leverage, you know, technical support from our support infrastructure.
So that's for the tool itself. I think the second part of your question talks to, you know, DB2 or WAS, you know, the product that the customer has acquired that's running in the virtualization environment. And, you know, that is the same, I think. I mean, one thing that I think the customer does need to be a little bit careful about is making sure that the product, like DB2 or WAS, supports the virtualization technology that they're deploying on. But if it does, then, you know, it's like any other support available when you acquire one of our products.
Whether the middleware supports the virtualization technology.
That's right. So, you know, for example, not every operating system is, you know, every version of every operating system is supported by, you know, the WAS product, right? You need to look when you buy WAS that it supports the operating system environment you're running on. The same is true for the virtualization technology you're running on. You want to make sure that, you know, WAS supports that that environment.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Another question was the I'm also getting a question about support of a Microsoft cluster server, whether that can be considered as a virtualization technology, eligible virtualization technology, which we can consider as a capacity, as a sub-capacity.
And that was the Microsoft, which product?
Cluster server.
You know, I'm not familiar with that one as a, I don't think that that's an eligible virtualization technology in our offering today. I mean, I think the technology that we're looking at next from Microsoft is the, you know, Hyper-V virtualization technology, which they're, you know, beta testing today. But Microsoft Process Server, Raj, are you familiar with that?
Carlos, no, I'm not. I mean, we support the Microsoft Virtual Server, and we're looking at the Hyper-V, but this one I'm not sure. If you send a note to the subcap ID, we can take a look. But right now it's not on the eligible list, and we don't have it immediately. We're focusing on Hyper-V.
Is there any other tools or technology which we get the inquiries from customers, and I can also send the questions to the self-capacity licensing ID?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, please press *1 on your touch-tone telephone if you have a question at this time. Once again, we'll pause for just a moment. And we have a question from Atuchi Kawada.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for having this call. I have a question about order process for IAMT tools. I found that CFO or customer's CSO will no longer check the IAMT orders before processing subsidy orders. And in another page, I saw during the subcapacity conversion process, sales or business partners place order for IMD. So there are many ways of the IMD orders, so I'm not sure how we can keep track of the status customer has a collector license of IMD or not. It's up to customers.
So, Steve, I think the question is, how do we know if a customer has ordered? First of all, is the question, how do we know if a customer has agreed or signed the subcapacity, agreed to the terms, that are relevant in the subcapacity attachment. I think is it signed up for the terms, or whether or not the customer has received the ILMT tool, has ordered the tool.
My question is related. We can track the subcapacities and the times acceptance via fast pass or SAP situation, but I'm not sure the customer will follow to orders, IBM the order. Because the IBM sales may place the orders, and the customer may place the orders.
Right.
There is some...
I think, Kawada-san, you're referring to the fact that prior to this announcement, the customer fulfillment organization would put subcapacity orders on hold. They would check to see if the customer had accepted the subcapacity terms in FastPass, and they would also check to see if the order included ITLCM, the predecessor product. With the new announcement, they will continue to look for the acceptance of subcapacity terms in FastPass, but they will no longer require and they will no longer hold an order up to make sure that the subcapacity part number order has also ordered ILMT. The reason for that is we have customers that may qualify for the exception to use ILMT. There's three or four exceptions there that they would not have to use ILMT, so we don't want to slow down the sales and order process by forcing subcapacity orders to look for the ILMT order. It'll be up to the customer to order ILMT to comply with our terms if they don't qualify for exception.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I understand the background. So I have another question about ILMT. Do we continue to provide a 10-year support and subscription for these products, or customers must renew with no charge at anniversary?
Customers, in order to get support, they'll need to renew using the renewal part number for ILM2 to ensure that they have entitlement to the support.
Okay. Thank you. And that's all.
Okay.
And as a final reminder, that is star one if you do have a question at this time. And at this time, there appears to be no additional questions. Mr. Bellick, I'll turn things back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thanks, Melinda. Thanks, everyone, for participating in the call. Encourage you to, you know, visit the website, continue to familiarize yourself with the offering, and have discussions with your customers about their use of virtualization. Thank you very much.
And that does conclude our conference call. We thank you all for joining us, and have a great day.